Lunch with Pippa Hudson.
And now,
Consumer Talk featuring Wendy Nola.
Right, traffic is nightmarish out there today, so we have sent Wendy back in her tracks to a Zoom connection or phone connection near us rather than risking her not being able to make it to studio as a result of the traffic. She is though with us for the full hour today to talk Consumer Talk, and as I mentioned earlier, it's a circle back today to the subject of the changes at Discovery Health Medical Aid and how they are impacting patients with chronic conditions in particular. If you want to join this conversation, if you've been impacted by the changes yourself and you want to tell us how and how you're dealing with it, remember you can phone in on 021 446 0567, or send a voice note to 072 567 1567. Wendy, good to have you with us. Good afternoon, even if it must be over a phone line.
Yes, sorry about that, Pippa. It seems to get worse every week, but yeah, wasn't in my favour today.
At least we have you loud and clear over the phone line. And Wendy, thanks for joining us. Now, I'm going to start just by recapping a little bit about where we began this conversation, because I'm aware of the fact that not everybody listening today might have been listening a month ago when we first raised this issue on air. And then I'll hand over to Wendy to take us further into what has developed since then. For context's sake, at the end of last year, Discovery Health making the decision to do away with some of the existing plans within its comprehensive series. It sort of combined some plans with others, condensed them from a list of 5 down to 3, I think it was. And that move effectively meant that roughly 28,000 members had to now face a choice, because the plan they used to be on was no longer going to be there from 2024. Your choice is either upgrade to a more expensive version and keep receiving the benefits that you used to enjoy, or downgrade to a cheaper option, but with a potential loss of some of those benefits. And for some, that was simply a numbers decision. Could they afford to pay more? Yes or no. Did they need to pay more? Yes or no. But for one category in particular, it's much, much more than that. And these are patients who are relying on very expensive chronic medications that have a really drastic impact on their quality of life. With those meds, they can manage their conditions, they can live a full and functional life. Without them, they face possible disability, the possibility of ongoing debilitating pain, and major curtailment of their ability to live a normal life. Now, when we spoke about this about a month ago, we heard from two examples, patients who had been impacted in this way. Michaela Fay, young woman with ankylosing spondylitis, who needs treatment with biologics that cost close to 10,000 rand a month. We also heard from Rizal Kutsir, somebody living with Crohn's disease, also treated with biologics. Both of those women had been told, you'll need to pay an extra 37% if you want to move to the higher plan that will continue to fund these meds. For them, that means roughly 2,700 rand extra every single month. Or downgrade to a cheaper plan, but those meds are not going to be covered. And in Rizal's case, in fact, some of the meds weren't going to be covered even on the new higher plan. She would still have to pay in cash if she wanted to stay on those specific medications. So that's where we were a month ago. And Wendy, won't you just remind us what Discovery Health told us a month ago about the reason for this change?
Okay, thanks, Pippa. So Discovery Health says that the move to do away with 3 of those pre-existing comprehensive plans, leaving just 2 of the more expensive one, was financially warranted due to massive and growing loss ratios. In other words, the members' premiums weren't failing by far to cover the cost of their meds every month. Dion Kortzer, who is Discovery Health's Chief Commercial Officer, told us that last year the total claims of members' comprehensive series exceeded their contributions to the scheme by 15.3% on average. And he said that meant a loss of 1.6 billion rand for Discovery Health. Yeah. And those losses, he said, had been increasing over time. And to put it into context, he said the losses are subsidized by other members of the Discovery Health scheme on the lower plan options. So he said healthier members with access to fewer benefits must pay more and more each year to the scheme in order for the scheme to maintain the benefits for members on the comprehensive series. He also reminded us that Discovery is the only open medical scheme to cover certain treatments, and that it funds the vast majority of treatment of these rare diseases and cancers in the private healthcare sector. And also, he made the point that the decision to close the plans had been approved by the Council for Medical Schemes, the CMS, as most people refer to it as, and they regulate the medical schemes of this country.
Okay.
So that's, we sort of reflected that. Well, we pretty much did reflect that. And
But
then we had some feedback.
Yeah, well, this is the reason we're circling back to it today, because we came off air that Wednesday a couple of weeks ago and opened our inboxes and found a whole lot of people making additional points that they thought were pertinent to what has happened with this change that we thought were worth airing today. Wendy, tell us a bit more.
Okay, it was mainly around the fact that, yes, this might have been a financial decision, but it's not medically warranted because of the massive impact on those affected. And a couple of people said that, in fact, it was a contravention of the Medical Schemes Act in terms of the medication issue. So, and they are busy liaising with the Council for Medical Schemes to challenge its approval of that move.
Okay.
So joining us today, their patient needs allowing, are Catherine McCormack, who's the Director of Autoimmune Alliance and the Executive Director of Arthritis Kids South Africa, and Sister Karen Davidson, who works at the Cape Town Infusion Centre and is also a Director of the not-for-profit organisation, the Autoimmune Alliance of South Africa.
Catherine and Corin, it's wonderful to have you joining us this afternoon, and thank you so much for your time. Catherine, if I may start with you, can you tell us a little bit about the impact of Discovery doing away with these plans on your patients and on the doctors who are treating them? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and thanks so much for having us back.
Sure.
We recently ran a survey to try and assess the impact on patients, and Karin can talk to this as well in great detail because she's dealing with these patients every single day. But I remember there were a couple of patients who were describing the impact. And there was one dad whose family depends on his access to biologics. He can't continue to function in his life and support his family unless he has access to the biologic. And so in order to afford the upgrade so that he could get his biologic, they'd taken their children off the medical aid.
Oy.
And that was the only way that they could do it.
Sure.
We have a lot of stories like that. I think the important thing here is that these patients have failed all other treatments. They're far down the road in their treatment journey. The symptoms are severe. They either already have had surgery, they're facing disability. These are medicines of last resort for these people. They know beyond a shadow of a doubt that they must have them or they must change the quality of their life fundamentally.
And as you've just referenced in that awful case study, Catherine, it's not only about their quality of life, because if this is the breadwinner in the house, the knock-on impact on other people's lives is severe as well.
Absolutely. Extraordinary impact across the family.
Karen, thank you as well for joining us this afternoon. I mean, how would you characterize the number of people who are flagging this with your alliance? Is it a trickle of emails? Is it a flood of them? Are we talking tens or dozens or more than that who are contacting you saying, this leaves me in an absolute pickle?
Oh, thanks very much for having us on here today.
Sure.
I think it started off as an absolute flood at the beginning of sort of halfway through January, when people realized that they weren't going to be able to access the care that they'd been previously funded for and approved for as medically indicated. And so there was this enormous panic around quality of life and disease activation and would I be hospitalized and what do I do to make this work? And so that has now, to this point, we are still getting patients contenting us, not being able to access medication, but that has slowed down. We've dealt with a huge number of that. Discovery, to their credit, have also dealt with some of those patients.
Okay.
But there are a number of patients who still are not being able to access treatment without a massive copay. And these are patients who have downgraded, but also patients who have remained on classic comprehensive, who this year are incurring a co-payment alongside drugs that they were previously getting funded in full.
Sure.
And so it's had a massive impact on financial, on sort of budgets for families. We've had patients who said they're going to take their children out of school because that's the only way. If they don't pay school fees and they're homeschool, then maybe they can try and afford the increase in premium. So it's been catastrophic.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest thing to highlight is that these are autoimmune conditions. They are life-threatening for a lot of these patients, particularly our patients with inflammatory bowel disease. So So not treating these patients results with catastrophic disasters. Mm. So you've got patients who then flare, they head for surgery. And the problem with having to restart treatment is often they don't respond well second time around. So it really has thrown a massive burden onto clinical practices, but a massive stress burden onto patients as well as a financial burden.
Yeah, it's a drastic situation.
Huge. Yeah.
Wendy, over to you.
Karine, could you summarize for us, please, the alliance's infringement argument, please? You're engaging with the Council for Medical Schemes. What is your argument in terms of you can't be doing this?
So I think Catherine can answer a lot of that very well because she's dealt with CMS hugely. But what the basic fundamental kind of principle is that these patients have triggered Regulation 15H and 15IC, which means that under the Medical Schemes Act, their treatment, when it triggers those regulations, needs to be covered in full, irrespective of their plan type. And that's really where we're sitting, is with these chronic PMB conditions that trigger these regulations. And these patients are not receiving treatment and they're getting treatment interruption because of the plan type changes with Discovery. And that's really where we're sitting.
Catherine, would you like to take that a little bit further? Regulations 15C, HC and 15IC, obviously not something a layperson is going to be too familiar with, but it sounds like this is provision within the law that was designed to envisage perhaps a situation just like this, that somebody who requires life-saving drugs of this kind does have a bit of a sort of a cushion underneath them. Am I understanding that correctly?
That's 100% exactly the intention of these regulations. And you're also correct that the layperson, A, wouldn't know about them, and B, might be a little intimidated or overwhelmed at having to read the regulations in order to fulfill their rights. Regulation 15H and I do precisely that. They allow for exceptions, funding exceptions to the normal scheme cost management rules like formularies and protocols and plan type benefits. And where people have met the criteria for these regulations, exactly as Karine said, the scheme is obligated to fund treatment and care regardless of plan type rules. And this is not something that's a new topic of conversation with Discovery or in fact with any medical scheme. This is an ongoing effort on our part. This is my third year of trying to clarify exactly a scheme's obligation to meet these criteria and meet these funding requirements. It's not just Discovery, it's across all medical schemes. Mm-hmm. And it is the fundamental issue is that the Council for Medical Schemes interprets these regulations one way, and the medical schemes interpret them in another way, and neither budges. And the Council for Medical Schemes consistently and routinely rules in line with their interpretation, and the schemes routinely assess applications in line with their application. And the only time a patient or a member ever has success in achieving his rights within the regulations is if he personally goes via a complaint to the Council for Medical Schemes, lays a complaint against the medical scheme, waits 4 months, and eventually gets a ruling from the CMS, and he then waits a further 3 months to decide for the scheme to decide if they're going to appeal the ruling. Sure. So in other words, this is a right that we all have as members of medical schemes, and the CMS, in a letter to me last week, reiterated that they are under no, they are not at all confused as how they interpret it. They interpret it exactly as this, an exception to funding rules, but they will not take a stand on the global issue. They won't take a stand on the systemic issue. They will only deal with this on a case-by-case basis. In other words, members have to go to the CMS in order to bring their rights to life. And that cannot possibly be the purpose of the regulation. Can't be the intention.
You know, sitting here listening to this, Catherine, the other thing that strikes me is the short-term view, in a way, of this. Because a patient who is well-managed on, even if it is an expensive drug, who is well-managed and able to live a daily life that doesn't include routine emergency visits and hospitalization because they're having flare-ups. I'm thinking of my own asthma. A couple of hundreds of rands a month, yes, of maintenance medication. But if I didn't have access to that medication, the alternative would be asthma attacks, lengthy stays in hospital, expensive treatments that are also going to be claimed from a medical scheme down the line. Surely the more far-sighted view would be to act in the interests of better ongoing maintenance and preventative medicine to make sure your member isn't going to end up in the very expensive hospital critical phase later on.
100%. It's a grey issue. With the price of biologics at the moment, there is not a clear answer to that. So there have been two small studies. David Eckstein, in fact, the gastroenterologist practice where Kyrene works, he referenced two studies in a recent talk where they tried to assess the cost of hospitalization, other medication, other interventions versus the cost of biologic. And of course, this is a financial cost, not a burden of disease on the family or the person. And it's not clear cut, to be honest. But that was those studies were done at a time when biologics were much more expensive than they are now. The price of biologics are falling all the time. I recently did a calculation based on the most recent Discovery membership base, which is around 3.5 million lives, members and beneficiaries all included. And in a meeting in Discovery last year, they told us they have 4,000 members using biologics. That was one of the representatives from Discovery, a senior representative. If you take 4,000 members using biologics at an average cost of 8,000 Rand, which I want to stress is a very high average, because most people using biologics, they cost about 3,500-4,000 Rand a month. The majority of people's biologics cost around 3,500. So an 8,000 Rand average is really a generous average. And if I calculate that out and I divide it across the 3.5 million members, we're talking about less than 10 Rand a month per member. And I know that it's a lot more complicated than that. The plans can't cross-subsidize, and I'm sure there's a lot of detail there that I'm missing. But at a very fundamental level, we're not talking about crippling the medical scheme financially. And I just feel that potentially this is a group of people that are easily identified within the base, and it's easy to take away their benefits. I don't see the scheme talking about increasing the premiums for people who smoke and have smoked for 10, 20, or 30 years. I don't see them hiking up premium rates for people who never exercise. These people are not victimized the way that users of biologics are. They're a small group of people. They have no other treatment options. And across the entire base, the cost is actually entirely manageable.
Cape Talk.
Consumer Talk.
Call now on 021-446-0567.
We're back in conversation with Wendy Nola about recent changes in the Discovery Health medical aid structuring and how these are impacting a particular category of patients with severe autoimmune conditions who rely on very expensive treatments, biologics, which they are now having to face the decision of paying quite substantially more to access via a more expensive plan, or taking the decision to move to a cheaper plan but not have access to that cover. Before the break, you were hearing from Catherine McCormack and Sister Kareen Davidson of the Autoimmune Alliance, a non-profit organization which represents many of these patients. They're amongst those who are challenging these decisions around the restructuring of Discovery's comprehensive series on medical grounds, saying, yes, we understand the decision has been made on a financial basis, but the implications medically are perhaps more severe than might have been foreseen. Now, listening into all of that was an additional guest that we'd like to bring into this conversation. And Wendy, perhaps you would like to just set the scene and tell us who we'll be hearing from and what it is that you'd like to hear from him. Good afternoon again.
Thanks, Pippa. Mark Hammond is founder and CEO of MediCheck. We've had him on the show before. His company takes on medical scheme disputes on behalf of members because, as we can see in this case, classic example, you know, there's a lot to that most lay people don't understand about the regulations. You know, they're very confusing. And so, you know, he has an expert who knows the lay of the land and whether they have a case or not, and how to you know, tackle the medical schemes with a particular issue. So, Mark, thank you for holding. You are very much involved in this saga. Please, could you explain your relationship with the Council for Medical Schemes and share with us your views on, you know, the financials, the legalities, and the ethics of Discovery Health's controversial decision to do away with the three of its five comprehensive plans, meaning that some people, most people must either downgrade, lose the benefit of the meds, expensive, relatively expensive meds, or pay 30-40% more than they were previously to get the benefit of that medication cover.
Thanks very much, Wendy. Good afternoon, Pippa, Catherine, and Karen, and to your listeners. I think that if I might just start, the removal of the three plans, which, of course, the scheme is allowed to do. It can amend or change plans. And the Council for Medical Schemes have, in actual fact, approved the plans. They were approved on the 19th of January of 2023, finally. Those rules were posted onto the Discovery website on Friday, the 23rd of February, 2024. So these plans have been approved, but I think it's critically important where you're talking about, and let's start off with the cost increases. So the plans that have been removed, patients were given the opportunity to upgrade or downgrade. I'm just looking at the upgrade section of the profiles. And if a member was on any of the three plans that have been discontinued, their increases, if they move to comprehensive, range from 24% to 47%. Sure. If they move to the executive plans, they range from 52% to an 81% increase. Sure. Okay, so that's the initial impact of the change in plans. However, and I think this is critically important, the regulations 15H and 15I definitely apply. But I must add and I must stress that each and every case is individual. And whilst I'm engaging with the CMS at this point in time on the matter, and they have a full communication from me as to what has actually happened, and I do believe that a number of CMS executives are listening into this call today, I think that we have a situation where the members, in actual fact, are not aware of, and you know, let's just look at one particular instance, and it's an instance that I think I shared with both Karen and with Christine. And that is the fact that a member, if there is a change in plan, a member can never ever be forced, and I'm just talking about one biological at the moment, and I think that this would apply across the range. A ruling was made in 2021 on a particular product, not necessarily with Discovery, okay? Mm-hmm. It started off on the 13th of January 2021. The ruling was made where a biological, the medical scheme said to the patient they had to change, they had to upgrade their benefit or their plan to obtain access to a biological product. This was ruled upon in 2021. The scheme appealed, and eventually in 2022, the scheme, the Council for Medical Schemes, ruled against the scheme, and that has become the standard factor that I am using now in fighting medical schemes. In terms of, and particularly in this particular instance, even a member who sits on a classic saver plan is now receiving biological medication and paid for in full by the medical scheme. So I think that, and I agree with Catherine, I agree with Karen, we have had discussions around this. I think that the situation at this point in time is that each and every case will have to be looked at individually based on the clinical history of the patient, bearing in mind that whilst we understand that the conditions and the 270 PMB conditions and the 27 chronic conditions, of which Karen mentioned ulcerative colitis, inflammatory bowel disease, and I think we've got to include Crohn's disease in that as well, these particular ailments, the algorithms that were originally written back in 1998 and promulgated in 2003, medicine has moved on, technology has moved on, but the original algorithms are still in place. Now, what has happened, if one really and truly looks at where Discovery are, and I think that where members are placed within Discovery, if you look at the actual rule set of Discovery, and it talks to specialized medicine and technology, they talk to a limit per year of 200,000 rand per year per member. That's the limit that they will pay for the member. But they then refer you to what's called Annex B. And Annex B talks to the various items, and these are all the rule plans for 2024. And it purely talks, the basis for cover is defined as a list of treatments including, and let's just take one drug, let's take a drug called Cosentyx. Let me take a drug that works for Karen and for and Catherine. Let's take Entyvio for Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. The rule in terms of MX should be clearly states as follows: in discovery, up to a maximum of the therapeutic reference price. Now, when you look at the scheme's rules, okay, they say refer to Annexure B. However, Annexure B doesn't quote a price. There is no reference beyond the fact that it will cover only up to 200,000 Rand a year. Okay. Now, I'm of the opinion, okay, and you must remember that there's a further dramatic effect on members that I don't even think that they're aware of. And that is the fact that when you move upwards in plan from the three plans that were discontinued, you've got to take into account that on the new classic comprehensive plan, the above threshold benefits for a single member have been limited to 35,000 Rand a year. Now, when you take a drug like Entyvio, which is at a cost of between 16 and 18,000 Rand per treatment for a member or per cycle for a member every 2 months, you know, you've got to take into account that, you know, that's going to eat up into that 200,000 very, very quickly. That's the first point. Secondly, the fact that on that particular drug, they will pay up to the reference price. The reference price that is being used by Discovery, which I think Catherine alluded to at 3,500 Rand average cost for a biological medication, is based on a particular drug called Humira, okay? And that's where Discovery have pegged their pricing. Now, to the average consumer who has been through the entire treatment protocol based on their condition and have found that the Humira is no longer being affected, Rule 15H and 15I must apply to that particular member. And those rules are very clear. You know, it says formulary provision must be made for appropriate substitution of drugs where a formulary drug has been ineffective or causes or would cause adverse reaction in a beneficiary, and I quote, without penalty to that beneficiary. Now, 15, that was 15H, and 15I is exactly the same. Provision must be made for appropriate substitution. Now, that substitution is the substitution of high-cost biologicals. I think one of the single biggest problems that are being faced out at the moment and the grandfathering of members into 2024, I think there was a system failure at Discovery. Okay, and I'm going to be honest with you. That's what I believe. In the cases that I've handled and we've handled close on, I think it's been 15 or 25 cases across various biologicals, members who were previously authorized for their biologicals came January, all of a sudden found they had huge co-payments going with their medication. Mm-hmm. On consultation with Discovery on a case-by-case basis, those have been amended, and their authorizations, which would go through to the end of April or to the end of May for the six-month period that has been applied, or for the 12-month period that has been applied to the drug, those are now being corrected. And as of this morning, we were finding processing through various of the specialized pharmacies who specialize in biologicals that these are now being paid for in full on the grandfathering of medications for patients who were previously authorized for the medications. So I think that the collapse that we saw during January and February was based on a system issue within Discovery, I think, number one, or alternatively, and please, I'm not looking to disparage anybody, maybe it was, you know, those who complain will complain and we'll sort it out, or those who don't complain, you know, they'll just pay the co-payment. I doubt that's the case. I think it was a system error within Discovery, but those have been effectively grandfathered, and we're seeing them on a daily basis now. Whenever we get a complaint, it's a simple call, and telephonically we're able to resolve that problem with the pharmacy online, whether it be a courier pharmacy in Carltonville, or whether it be a courier pharmacy in Natal, or whether it be in Johannesburg. So that seems to be working. But, and I think this is the critical issue, that it is not merely the reduction, the removal of the three schemes, or the three plans by Discovery. You need to take into account that for 2024, Discovery rules in terms of Annexure B, okay, now limit and clearly limit, without quoting the therapeutic reference price, limit every member, whichever plan you're on. It makes no difference. You can be on executive, you can be on classic comprehensive. You are limited, if you look at Annexure B, of discovery rules. And this is where the problem is going to arise for 2024. Because those patients who are on the comprehensive plan and have traditionally been and are new entrants into the biological market, okay, they are going to face huge co-payments coming during the year of 2024.
Once they've hit that.
At least they've got an appetite.
Your question.
Yeah. Yes, very much so. I mean, unless it sounds like you have to put up a fight. Otherwise,
it's a fight on every case. Other than those cases that were that should have been grandfathered from 2023 into 2024.
But a fight that can be won, which is the good news I take away from that, Wendy, that if you are willing to go there and fight the fight, there is, from what Marcus said, at least a prospect of some success, which is a little reassuring, even if it's a for now solution that's going to back up against that overall limit later on in the year when you reach your maximum very quickly. It's at least a step in the right direction.
Join the conversation.
Join the conversation.
You're with Cape Talk.
We're back with Wendy Nola and still listening in Catherine McCormack and Corinne Davidson from the Autoimmune Alliance, talking about the impact of changes at Discovery Health and the structuring of their plans on particularly those who are reliant on biologic, very expensive biologic drugs to manage chronic conditions. Wendy, I know you took some of the feedback and input we had from our guests that we've already heard from and put it to Discovery again. We've got a couple of minutes left. Can you try and just summarize one or two of the key points of their responses to you?
Yes. You always get a very, very comprehensive response from Discovery Health, so I am going to have to do a bit of a pricey. So first point, the consolidation, says Dion Kotso, who is Discovery Health's Chief Commercial Officer. He says the consolidation of those comprehensive plan options and the complaints regarding the PMPs with reference to those regulations 15 and the Medical Schemes Act, he says they're two separate issues, the prescribed minimum benefits and the complaints about the plans. He said, that said, the consolidation of the comprehensive plan options provides an opportunity to clarify the scheme's obligations in terms of the regulations. So the closure of those three plans, those three options, were submitted, the proposal was submitted with the benefit changes to the CMS effective for 2024, and all of that, including the contributions across all the options, were also approved. In answer to the question, were there any clinical assessments done before this decision was taken? No, it was not taken lightly, but it was the decision was made after assessing the financial implications. It wasn't a clinical decision. It was about the long-term sustainability of the comprehensive plans. Let's see. We did accept that we would have to complete clinical assessments for affected members who moved to an alternative option on the scheme as a standard practice. Clinical assessments were then done for all members who moved on to an option that does not offer access to these medication benefits on their new plan, which determined the funding of their treatment and included a review in line with the requirements of Regulation 15H and I. Interestingly, this didn't form part of the initial response, Pippa, if you recall.
Yeah.
There was nothing about we are going to have to assess case by case. So where affected members met the prescribed minimum benefit requirements of those regulations, the scheme approved full funding of their treatments, even though they may have downgraded to a plan that does not include all the benefits of classic comprehensive. And they will only be funded, and Mark alluded to this, up to the available DMB benefits for their condition.
Okay. Wendy, sorry, but with the time is marching away from us. I think just in closing, interesting stats that he shared with you about what decision members have made. Shall we finish with that very quickly? Can you tell us who decided to do what?
Okay. So not all those 28,000 people who were affected by the dissolving of those three plans have this medication issue. So there were only 831 members, and of them,
78%, 654 upgraded their membership to the higher schemes, which means they kept their medicine benefits. 168 members, 20%, downgraded their membership to an option with fewer benefits. And now, of those 168, 35 of them have had their treatment plans approved in full. So, as we've heard, they are looking at them, but it seems that, you know, you have to put up a bit of a fight, have the assessment done, and then maybe get some joy. But it still means of those 168 who downgraded, 35% so far, I mean, 35 of them so far have got the benefit, their medication benefit reinstated. Nine of the affected members, 1%, have just cancelled their membership altogether. So who knows what they're going to do.
Wendy, thank you so much. We have to leave it there with sincere thanks to our guests, Catherine McCormack and Corinne Davidson of the Autoimmune Alliance as well. And if nothing else, take away the fact that some people are managing to win back their benefits by fighting on a case-by-case benefit. And if you're one of those affected, it really is worth, at the very least, giving it a try.